It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. Holy shit. We're back in the studio. Like, granted, it's not going to be out a week after the last one, but it's still technically two podcasts in 2 weeks. Like, what are we doing?
We are going to try to keep this going. I am putting my foot down. I'm actually making a commitment to making this a weekly thing again.
So there it is. Jesse Granger doesn't give a shit about Rink Rats until right now.
Yeah.
Now it's a commitment. Now yes. It's important to Jesse.
I'm doing my best. This is still a labor of love.
Oh no, it's 100% a labor of love, and I feel like that gets lost sometimes, but all we want to do really is talk about the Golden Knights, and it's hard to carve out some time. We can't necessarily do these in the press box, so that'd be fun. It'd be fun to do one like live after a game.
Yeah.
After the post-game show. We should just do it at Beer House.
Yes.
That would be good. That would be exciting. So we don't really have much of a direction or a plan right now. I guess big news that came out today, not necessarily big news, but Max Lagasse back down to Chicago. Malcolm Subban activated off of IR. We can postulate as to what the injury may be to Ryan Carpenter, but we don't know a time frame as to when he may or may not be back. We don't necessarily have a time frame on Will Carrier. Nothing new on Eric Halla. So about what we expected when it comes to injuries with this team, right? That's about all we can report at this point.
I mean, Carpenter very clearly has a concussion.
Yes.
The thing with concussions, unlike pretty much every other injury, is there is no timeline.
No, not at all.
If a guy tears his ACL, if a guy breaks his finger, this has happened enough to where we know pretty spot on how long it's going to take to recover. A concussion could be 2 days. It could be 3 months. We saw with Sidney Crosby, it could be half a season. You never know.
Yeah, and if you read into Gerard Gallant's comments about Ryan Carpenter, he's used phrasing, terminology like he's feeling better or he's feeling good or whatever
he's
the case.
Well today, yeah.
Doing well today. All of that can change relatively quickly when it comes to coming back from a concussion. There's just a lot of gray area there, but my guess at this point would be, because this is a question that I've gotten, my guess is that if Will Carrier is ready to go for tomorrow, Ryan Carpenter to IR is probably the most likely roster move.
Yeah, that's the easy thing to do. You don't want to send anybody down, obviously.
Well, you're so close to February 25th.
Yeah, they need at least one guy to be injured for another 2 weeks. And once you get to February 25th, you're good. No roster limits. And the whole who will they waive to claim Valentin Zhukov goes away.
What do you think of him?
I think he's good. I don't think he's ever going to be spectacular. Like I saw he could be William Karlsson of this year. Like that's never going to happen. He has had plenty of chances, and I don't think he's ever going to be a top six, like true top six player in the NHL. I think he can be good, though. I think he can be better than Carpenter, better than Lindberg. I think he can give you more.
My favorite thing that's happening right now with Valentin Zhukov, and I like his shot. I like his instincts in the offensive zone. And last night on the postgame show, I said there were spots where he wasn't great defensively. And it's not that it's an effort thing. It's a read thing, right? Like mm-hmm. There were multiple times where he had time, he had space. He could have chipped the puck out. He could have made a simpler play on the boards. And he throws it to the middle of the ice. It gets picked off, intercepted. And all of a sudden, the Golden Knights are running around in their own zone. And you can live with those mistakes every now and again, but it can't be a theme in your game for Coach Gerard Gallant. It just can't, especially if you need ice time to produce and be a contributing factor on this team. But Frank asked me, is it reads or is it like a mental thing or is it an effort thing? And I was kind of tripped up on that question, mainly because I think it's a little bit of both. I think that there are significant moments in games where if Valentin Zhukov is in the offensive zone, he's going to show you a little bit more than when he's in the defensive zone. So I think there's a little bit of effort there. But I also think that with this new system, his reads might not be the greatest because he just doesn't know yet what to do with the puck in his own zone.
Yeah, and I don't think he's been bad over there. I think he's been better than Peary
So that's the thing that I want to really touch on, that I really want to hammer home. And I love the fact that we're getting into this. Brandon Peary, beloved by everybody, all Vegas Golden Knights fans. I mean, love this guy. Shouted from the rooftops when he was sent back down because George McPhee could play that card.
I love him also. I just got a bobblehead sent to me from the Chicago Wolves. I'm pretty pumped.
I'm a little jealous. Did you see the McPhee bobblehead?
Oh, I want one bad. Bowling green. Okay. And it's half suit, yes. Half player.
Yes. And I'm not one to like really get excited about some of my tweets, but did you see the reply that I sent to Sinbin?
No.
All right. So I quote tweeted that bobblehead, and I'm like, my office is not complete without one of these. And Ken's like, if you get one, I'm gonna steal it from you. Way to go. We're gonna know where to point the cops to, Ken. But to that response, I just said it's McPhenomenal.
McPhenomenal.
Yeah, it's good. It's
I
great.
Want one bad.
I do too. And like my wife has like a little bit of a crush on George McPhee, not gonna lie.
So do I. It's okay.
It's yeah, but you've got his number. Like I shudder to think what'll end up happening if you're like, hey Amanda, I'm his number, like holy crap. But like the best narrative to me right now is that Brandon Peary's garbage, Valentin Zhukov's better, and Peary is never going to be the long-term fix. Was Peary ever supposed to be the long-term fix? I think Peary came up in a time, in a situation where the Golden Knights desperately needed anything to go their way when it came to depth scoring. He was able to fit in on one line. It hasn't been on multiple lines. It hasn't been in multiple situations. He's been at his best only with Stastny and Tuck. He's been invisible with anyone else.
Yes.
I don't think that it was ever in the plans for Brandon Peary to play more than 9 games.
No, Peary's nice to have because he's a legit plug-in for top 6.
Right. So,
like, whereas, I think all these players are kind of on the same tier. So in that tier, it's Peary, Zhukov, Carpenter, Lindbergh, Noshik. Those are all, like, the same tier of player. Peary can fill in for Riley Smith. And that first line was not good when he was up there, but he's a similar player. You can kind of plug him in. He's got the skill set. He can fill in on the second line. Obviously, that's where he was fantastic. Whereas, like, when you put Lindbergh up there, it's useless. Like, it's not, nothing's happening. His best role that he's shown in the NHL is, despite having amazing hands in practice, is trying to be a shutdown line with Eakin and Carpenter. So I think Peary has a use, but he's definitely not like, this guy's going to be in our top 6 going forward type thing. He's a UFA at the end of the year. I would bet he's probably not a Golden Knight next season.
Well, I would argue that maybe he will be within the organization, but the understanding is that he's going to play in Chicago and he's not going to be in the NHL. That's kind of my main assessment. Unless
I think a team might offer him something this year.
But do you think he'd go anywhere where he's not guaranteed to stay? So like, His wife's from Chicago. He likes the fact that the Golden Knights affiliate is in Chicago and he can be home and near his family. Do you think that he signs with maybe the Blackhawks? Is there a need for a Brandon Peary with the Blackhawks? Do you think that that's something he would entertain? Or do you think he'd rather have the security of knowing he's in the city he wants to be in, albeit in the AHL?
I think he'd rather be in Chicago if it's in the AHL, but if any NHL city trumps Chicago, like, come on. He makes $250,000 or whatever in Chicago. You can make $1 million in live in freaking Columbus, wherever the hell it is, like anywhere in the country, or in North America, pick a spot. That's better for a couple years. I honestly just think after the way he blew up this year, the attention he got, some team's going to give him an offer. Last season, he was a UFA. Nobody offered him.
Sure.
So he came crawling back to the Golden Knights, decided to sign with them. This year, I think when he hits the open market, some team will offer him something.
What if he doesn't score another goal this year? Well, you still think that happens?
He might not play again.
Still think a team throws something at him?
I think so. There's some pretty bad teams in the NHL.
There's garbage teams.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's teams that could use Brandon Peary.
Okay, stat of the night last night. There might have been a couple. I think I was telling you about a different one. But for me, there were two that really stood out. The Anaheim Ducks have won only 2 games in 52 days.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's horseshit.
More amazing No. The Jets are horseshit, and the Stars.
God, the Paul Maurice quotes were phenomenal.
Yeah,
so
everything
good.
Was bad. I just hope the plane works. Right? He's like, we were bad. The equipment staff was bad. The players were bad. I just
coaches
hope the plane
were bad.
Works. Yeah,
and then he's asked to clarify the coaches, and he's like, "Yeah, no, we just weren't good enough. We were horseshit tonight." Like, I love the honesty.
Yeah, but back to the Ducks thing, because they are horseshit, but not in the same way that Dallas and Winnipeg are. They're minus 51 goal differential on the season. Minus 51. The next worst team is only minus 32.
Well,
and they've got John Gibson playing in goal.
Yes, like,
do you know how bad you have to be to score 52 fewer goals than your opponents with the best goalie in the league so far this year in net?
I believe they've been outscored 31-6 in their last six games.
This team is, how does Carlisle have a job?
I think Bob Murray wants to still have a job. And at this point, right, like if you fire Randy Carlisle right now and there are no changes, like nothing gets appreciably better, what are you going to do?
Yeah,
you're the next guy. Yeah. Like you are, if it doesn't work with your next coach, with your next hire, you're screwed. And
so just buying yourself some time, you think?
Well, here's the thing that I brought up with the Ducks. And I'm sorry, let me go back. The other stat of the night last night was from Mark Spector. The Chicago Blackhawks are 2 points out of the wild card spot in the Western Conference. Simultaneously, they're 3 points out of worst in the Western Conference.
Yeah, the bottom of the West, once you get past the top five or six teams, is embarrassing. And to bring it back to Golden Knights.
So bad.
Because some people on Twitter say we don't talk about the Golden Knights enough.
Was that us?
Or it was gold. It was when
it was
I was
insider.
On the Insider
yeah,
show.
Yeah, it was the
but
Insider
it was when
show.
I was there, though.
I mean, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to talk about news, too. They were on a bye week.
Yeah. But anyways, to bring that stat that the Blackhawks are 2 points out of the playoffs and 3 points out of last place, you mentioned you think the Golden Knights still have a chance to win this Pacific Division.
I do.
It's going to take a really good run, and they do have 8 of the next 9 at home, 10 of the next 12 at home. When I think how bad the bottom of the West is really, really, really magnifies the importance of winning the division. Because if the Golden Knights finish second or third, you're getting San Jose.
Yep.
I think the Golden Knights are better than San Jose, but that is a tough matchup. That's a coin toss. One bounce here, one bounce there. You never know. Like, either team could win that series, and no one would be surprised.
Sure.
If you win the division, all of a sudden, it goes from you're playing San Jose to you could be playing Chicago in the first round. The team you beat a combined, like, 18-1 or whatever. The team is a steaming pile of shit.
But Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Renaissance Dylan Strome. And
Strome has been amazing.
He's been phenomenal.
He
thought it
looks like the third overall pick that he was supposed to be.
I thought it was a great move for Strome and for Chicago when it happened.
I agree. But anyways, it's not just Chicago. It could be St. Louis is coming up for that wild card spot. It could be Minnesota, who hasn't won in forever. Like,
what if it's Vancouver?
Vancouver is no good. And some really bad team is going to, like, two of them, the 7 and 8 seeds are going to probably be very bad in the Western Conference. So if you can win one of those two divisions, if you're Winnipeg or Nashville, or if you're Calgary or San Jose or Vegas, you're, I don't want to say first round bye, because this is hockey and upsets happen all the time, but it makes your road to the Stanley Cup final significantly easier, because you only have to beat one of Calgary or San Jose, whoever wins that series. Whereas if you get San Jose, Calgary's going to get that first round bye. You now have to beat San Jose, then you have to beat Calgary, then you have to beat likely Winnipeg or Nashville. It's significantly harder on you.
But wouldn't that be so Calgary, though, to like be the number one seed and run away with the division and face clearly an inferior opponent, but all the scoring dries up, and David Rittich is like a normal person.
And you just lose 4-1 to
and
Chicago.
And you just lose 4-1 to Chicago because they've been there and they know.
Yeah. I mean,
like, it would be
very Calgary,
It just seems like the worst possible spot for the Calgary Flames. Like, if I'm Calgary,
I have all the pressure.
I don't know that I want to finish first. And I'm not saying that that's not their goal, but I don't know that I want to be in that situation, knowing that you're probably going to end up playing a team that's got, what, 30 standings points less than you?
You'd rather not be expected to win.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just, I don't, I love the way they play. It's not going to be the same in the playoffs. They're not going to run and gun with everybody in the playoffs. It's just not going to happen.
I agree. But offensive teams still, I mean,
I
the
just,
last
I'm so
five
worried
Stanley
about
Cups
their goaltending.
Have all been offensive teams.
I know, but I'm so worried about their
you're
goaltending.
Right, you're right. So am I. But anyway, the point I was trying to make is your point is how bad the Western Conference is, the bottom of it. And I mean, it's if one of the five teams doesn't make the Stanley Cup final, it would be shocking. Like, it's going to be, there are five teams that, in my opinion, any of the five can beat any of the other four.
Sure.
Calgary, San Jose, Vegas, Winnipeg, Nashville. That's the class of the Western Conference.
So I want to touch on something because the narrative is, there's two points that I'm making here. The LA Kings are within striking distance. The Anaheim Ducks are still within striking distance. We're heading up into the trade deadline. How much better could Anaheim be in 2 years if they recognize they're awful right now and sell? Significantly better.
Well, you have to draft better, though. Well, you're going to get a bunch of pieces, but you have to hit on them.
Well, sure, you do have to hit on them, but at least you're giving yourself a chance.
Yeah. I mean, because, the chances that the Ducks make a cup run with Getzlaf, Perry, that core.
It's not going to happen.
It's very slim.
And here's the main issue. When it comes to Bob Murray, when it comes to GMs in general, when it comes to ownership, well, you're only 3 points out. You're only 4 points out. Go for it.
Yeah.
Well, but we're not a contender. No. You're almost there. You're right there. You could be a contender. That's false.
Yeah.
There are not eight contenders out of the West. No. I'm sorry. There just aren't. And the other narrative is that the Golden Knights aren't good. The Golden Knights aren't a good hockey team.
Where did that narrative come from?
It's been out there. It's on Twitter. It's all over Twitter, right?
You know what else is on Twitter?
This is a horrible team. And, okay, so there's a tool that I've been using a lot recently, Wave Intel. And it's you can compare teams against each other.
I saw you post the screenshot.
Okay, so I screenshot last year's Golden Knights versus this year's Golden Knights, because all we ever hear is that this team is not as good as last year's team. In most all categories, this team's better than last year. And that's without Nate Schmidt for 20 games.
Yeah.
And okay,
I don't think this team's better than last year.
You really don't?
No.
Why not?
Because the top line's not playing like they were last year.
Okay, I get it. I understand that. But do you think that that's correctable?
Yeah.
Okay,
the potential for this team is higher than the potential for last team.
Okay.
Because the first line has the potential to be the same thing, right? They can all of a sudden become what they were last year.
Sure.
That's possible.
Yeah.
The second line, the ceiling for the second line is way higher this year.
Yep.
The Hala Neil Perron line cannot be as good as Tuck, Pacioretty, Stastny at their best.
I agree.
So in my opinion, this team, the ceiling is higher for this team. But they haven't played as good as they did last year. Clearly, it's the standings show it, the goals. They don't have a person with 40 points.
Shooting percentage is worse this year than it was last year.
The PDO is terrible. I'm just saying they don't have a guy with 40 points this
year.
But
my argument is this team is significantly closer to the team last year than a lot of people think.
Yeah, I agree.
The people out there that think that this team fell off a cliff and that they're not good, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And it's fundamental, right? I bring up Anaheim for a reason, because Anaheim's right in the mix for that wild card spot. Anaheim should be sellers because clearly they are a bad hockey team.
Yeah.
The Golden Knights are clearly a good hockey team.
Yes.
There's no mistaking that. The danger for franchises comes in when you can't differentiate between the two.
Yes.
The Golden Knights are a good organization that understands they're good. They're going to probably go out at the trade deadline and try to acquire something. Because you talked about how the top line this year is not as good as it was last year. But there's potential to be significantly better for that line. The second line potential right now is significantly higher than what it was last year. The third line is another story.
It's the same. I mean, it's the same useless line that it was last year.
I completely agree with you. How do you fix it?
You bring someone in.
All right. So you wrote a piece for The Athletic.
Yeah. So I did a deadline primer on The Athletic.
How fun was that to write?
It was pretty fun. It took me like a long time. It's a lot of writing, which is cool for The Athletic. They let me write as long as I want. If I would have turned that story in at the Sun, they would have, like, thrown me out a window. It was like 3,000 words.
Was it?
So, but in this primer, I broke it into pieces, and I started with McPhee's trade deadline history, went on to salary cap situation, went on to biggest needs for the Golden Knights, which is clearly something to spark the third line. Mm-hmm. The third line needs a score. Whether you bring in someone that is now in the top six and it bumps someone in the current top six down to
sure.
the third line, or whether you just bring someone in to put them on the third line, that to me is where the Golden Knights can improve the most. I broke down the tradable assets and what players they may target. So I was limited to four players that they may target, because otherwise I could pick 20 and the story would go on forever. The four I picked are all four wingers. For that reason, I think the third line needs an upgrade.
I don't think, and I think you've written about this, you've done a lot of research on this, defense is not what's holding this team back.
No, they're top five in pretty much every statistical category that you can look at.
But stats are stupid.
Yeah, I know. Look, the Golden
I have
Knights,
eyes.
Yeah.
I have eyes, and I know what my eyes tell me.
Yeah, and the issue that people have with understanding why the Golden Knights defense is good is because they don't have individually good defensemen.
No.
Like, Nate Schmidt is good, but as a number one defenseman, he would be in the bottom half of the NHL as far as number one defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
Then you look at the rest of them, it's like Braden McNabb, okay, not that impressive. Colin Miller, Shea Theodore, Derek Englund, Nick Holden, John Merrill. You go down the list, it's like none of these guys are that impressive, so then people think, oh, we need better defensemen. No, the defense is fine.
The structure's fine.
And you have Fleury behind them, but it's not just Fleury. The other argument is, well, they're fourth in goals allowed. And people say, well, that's because Fleury. Well, they're also fifth least shots allowed at the net. So, like, clearly it's not all Fleury. The defense is playing well. For why you trade a defenseman has less to do with them being top five in the NHL and more to do with what's coming in the pipeline.
And that's my argument, too, is that you've got Brännström, you've got Hägg, you've got Whitecloud, you've got Bischoff, right? Where the hell are they going to fit
they
into
could
the,
have Jimmy Schultz.
Where are they going to fit? Though?
That's my point.
The question. And so I think we talked about it on the podcast last time, or maybe two podcasts. I don't remember.
It was
but
where they fit in.
Yeah but it was simply you might need to move an established guy.
Yeah. So in my opinion, you can trade Colin Miller. You can trade this is the one that gets everyone
riled up. I'm so excited
Shea Theodore.
About this.
You can trade Shea Theodore and you'll be all right.
What do you have to get? Okay. And I'm posing the question, and I'm a horrible friend. I haven't read your article yet, but we'll get into it. What do you get back for Shea Theodore?
Well, so the five guys that I mentioned, or four guys, sorry. Wayne Simmonds.
I'm high on Wayne Simmonds. I love Wayne Simmonds.
Fits perfectly into what Gerard Gallant likes out of a player. He's super physical. He can be a net front presence. We talked about him a little bit last week. Matt Zuccarello is more of a...
A little bit more speed more finesse.
He's like a Riley Smith-esque player, like that sort of, like, he creates, he's got a good shot, he's fast, he's not going to be super physical, but I think he can fit in with the Golden Knights. Mark Stone, who is the best of the four. He's, in my opinion, the leader for Selke. He's the best defensive forward in the NHL. You mentioned he leads the NHL in steals.
Yep.
He's scoring at a high, he'd be the leading scorer on the Golden Knights.
There's a lot of players that would be the leading scorer on the Golden Knights.
And then finally, the one that I—and those three are all guys that are going to be UFAs at the end of the year. They're edging towards 30.
Mm-hmm.
They may be a rental if you don't re-sign them. The one guy that doesn't fit that mold is Nikolai Goldobin for Vancouver. And he's a 23-year-old guy that was a first-round pick. He has a ton of talent. He hasn't fit in. They moved him. I forgot who drafted him. Anaheim, I think. They moved him to Vancouver. He has been in the coach's doghouse for the last, let's see, what did I put? Since January 13th, he's played one game. He's been a healthy scratch every other game.
Wow.
And he just hasn't been producing. So I think Vancouver could be ready to move on from him. You get a 23-year-old, which... the story I wrote about Zikov and what everybody's talked about is that age group is what they need. They need more players in the age group of Tuck and Zikov and Theodore. So anyway, say you trade Theodore. I think that could get you one of those guys.
Theodore for Stone and
well, Theodore, you'd probably have to Theodore add someone and for what? Stone. For Stone, you'd have to add something else.
Pick or prospect?
Probably a prospect. Maybe a pick, not a first round pick.
No,
but Stone is worth more than those other three.
Well, I agree. I get the question, and you wrote about it a little bit in the article, is if you end up getting Stone, I don't think that you want him to be a rental.
Yeah.
And so understanding how good Mark Stone is, you're looking at $8 to $10 million,
yes,
average annual value. Is that something that fits the mold of what this team currently is?
Yeah. So obviously they don't have anywhere near that. There's no one on this team that's anywhere near that,
right,
threshold. Where is my salary breakdown? All right. So they do have more room than I think even me, when I looked it up and actually broke it down and got a calculator out. Like, they have more than I thought they were going to. Remember, if you trade Shea Theodore, his salary goes with that,
which
gives you even more money to work with. But this is with all their players under cap right now. They have, once David Clarkson goes on long-term IR, they've got about $67 million spent for next season.
Okay.
Projected cap, according to Gary Bettman, is $83 million.
Yep.
That leaves the Golden Knights with about $18 million in cap space, $18.357 million. Got to sign William Karlsson.
What do you project his number?
For the sake of just projecting, I said $6.5 million.
Okay.
Could be $7 million. Could be a little higher, but I think whether it's a long-term deal or whether he goes to arbitration, either way, his cap hit next year will probably be about $6.5 million, maybe $7
million. Okay.
That leaves you about $11.8 million. Two other restricted free agents next year, Tomasz Nosek and Malcolm Subban. They're not going to get huge raises.
No.
They may keep them. I put Nosek $1.1 million, Subban $725,000. Those are 110% of their salaries from this year, which is about the right raise.
Okay.
That leaves McPhee with $10 million to fill five roster spots. Now, remember, this is with Shea Theodore's salary and Colin Miller's salary. If you
Good
were
point.
To trade
no,
one of those two,
yep.
Now you trade Shea Theodore, what's he making a year? Five?
I'd have to look it up.
Yeah,
somewhere in the ballpark.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that leaves you $10.5 million. Now, remember, let's say you're bringing two defensemen up. Say it's Whitecloud and Haig. Doesn't matter who it is. Two of them.
Well, it's not Whitecloud and Haig. Come on.
Brännström and Whitecloud, Brännström and Haig, whoever. Let's say it's two of those guys.
Yep.
Now, they're on their entry-level deals. They're going to combine to make less than $2 million.
Yep.
So now you only have three spots to fill with $10 million plus whatever Shea Theodore or Colin Miller's salary that you trade away is. All of a sudden, it's like, wow, we need three forward spots. We've got $15 million. You can sign Mark Stone or Wayne Simmons or whoever the hell you want as a rental.
Yeah, the money
may
there.
Not be a rental. You have the money because then you sign him for $10 million. Now you've got $5 million to sign two guys. So that's a piece of cake.
Let me ask the question another way. Does George McPhee make a trade for Mark Stone, giving up a Shea Theodore who's got term and was going to be a cornerstone, or a Colin Miller who has term and not a cornerstone but a vital part? Do you make that trade for Mark Stone if he doesn't resign?
No. McPhee needs to talk to him first.
Yeah, I agree.
And McPhee has made it clear that I think part of the reason the Erik Karlsson deal never happened was he was reluctant to give all those pieces up without Erik Karlsson signing a deal. And now you see, by Erik Karlsson not having signed in San Jose and not showing any signs of wanting to sign in San Jose, why McPhee...
Yeah. There's a whole lot of weird
hesitant.
There's a whole lot of weird going on around Erik Karlsson this year.
Yeah, so
I don't know why. It just something seems weird with him in that situation in general.
I agree. But anyways, yeah. So the whole point of all those numbers I just thrown at you, if you're like sitting there in your car trying to do all this math,
there's for sure going to be a couple of hashtags suck at Grangers right now for sure.
So, but anyways, the whole point of all those numbers is to say, after signing William Karlsson, after bringing back Nosek and Subban and completing this whole team the way you want to, you still have room to Wayne Simmons, Zuccarello, Mark Stone, whoever it is, Panarin, if you want to go crazy and spend a ton of assets, whatever it is, whatever the Golden Knights decide to do, that guy doesn't necessarily have to be a rental. They do have room to sign them.
I guess the question that I kind of have in my mind, or the thing that I'm most thinking through, is that Mark Stone at $10 million for what? For like 6, 7 years, maybe 8 years, mm-hmm. I guess, if you want to go that long. But like Mark Stone at $10 million, does that change the dynamic of the Golden Knights locker room? Because we've heard from inception, it's a team, it's the collective, it's not the individual. Jonathan Marchessault takes the hometown discount. William Karlsson has to go to arbitration or has to sign right before arbitration because George McPhee's not comfortable giving him or paying him like a 43-goal scorer and a number one center. Does it fit the Vegas Golden Knights model of everyone is more or less equal,
yeah,
right?
Like, it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't fit that.
But can this team win if that's not the model?
Yeah, I think so. I think every team that's won a Stanley Cup has a guy that makes $10 million, right? I mean, like, this is not like, it's not like, wow, man, every time you pay a guy, like you paid Connor McDavid, like, look what happens. Everyone is crap around him. Like, no, the Penguins have been doing that with Malkin and Crosby, and they're fine.
Well,
and Ovechkin gets paid crazy, and so does Kuznetsov, and, like, they were fine. And the Kings, when Kopitar was leading them, like, he was making a ton of money, and they were fine. Like, I think you can do it. Now, I don't know Mark Stone.
Sure.
Based off of his play style, it makes me think he's probably going to fit perfectly with this team.
From a play standpoint, I think Mark Stone makes the most sense.
Yeah.
Because he is fantastic in his own zone. We've mentioned the takeaways. He leads the NHL in takeaways, so he's dogged on the back check. He gets in quick enough on the forecheck to make a difference, and he can put the puck in the back of the net.
Yeah.
So Mark Stone instantly makes you better. Not even debatable.
Dude's got 22 goals and 51 points. He's plus, I think, 14 on the Ottawa Senators.
Right. So I, like, if it's me and I believe in Eric Brandstrom, because I think that's the defenseman you need. That's the defenseman you need to believe in.
Yeah. And also, by the way, that whole math that I was saying, I remember I was like, we got down to like, okay, you need three forwards for $10 million or whatever. Also, if you get Gusev to come over, that's a top six extremely skilled forward at an entry-level deal. He's making less than $1 million a year. That's another super cheap fill-in. I'm just trying to, like, paint the picture of they have enough room.
And Zikov's under contract next season,
he's
too, right? And it's under
season.
$1 million,
yes,
for him? Okay, so you could conceivably have a really good offensive-minded third line.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
see, I like Mark Stone. I think Mark Stone makes a lot of sense. I know that this is going to upset some people, but this is more than likely Pierre-Édouard Bellemare's last season with the Golden Knights.
Probably, yeah.
Right? Cody Eakin will be the fourth-line center next year.
Yes.
Okay. So, third-line center, Eric Halla, if we're fleshing it out that way, right? Mark Stone, where do you put him?
First line.
First line, playing with Carlson and Marchessault.
Or it can be Carlson and Smith, but let's just say Marchessault, Carlson.
So then you don't touch the second line.
Second line is Pacioretty, Stastny, and Tuck.
And then you've got Gusev,
Riley, Smith, and Halla.
Holy shit. Lord Jesus.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. And the thing is, like, yeah, it sucks to lose Shea Theodore because he's a great young piece. I love Shea in the locker room, one of my favorite guys to talk
to. Right, for sure.
Or Colin Miller.
Right.
But you need room for Hague and Brandstrom and Whitecloud.
I agree.
If they get Jimmy Schultz, who's one of the top undrafted free agents in college. He's playing for, I'm blanking on the name of the school. They're a stud school, Minnesota, whatever. They're stud school. He went back to school to win a national championship. He was at Golden Knights development camp. He didn't sign a contract with him, but he was at the development camp. The Golden Knights clearly have connections with the guy. He's talking to the Golden Knights. If you sign him, he's better than Whitecloud. He all of a sudden is up there with Hague and Brandstrom. You've got four studs. Like, they're eventually going to need room to make the roster.
Yeah.
But right now, their top four defensemen, Nate Schmidt, Braden McNabb, Colin Miller, and Shea Theodore, are all signed for the next 3 years,
right?
Some of them longer.
Right.
There's no room for that youth. So if you trade Shea Theodore or Colin Miller, it sucks, yes. But Brandstrom comes in, Hague comes in, whoever it is, they could be as good or better than him in a year, and you have Mark Stone.
Right. And I think that's... And we talked about it on the last podcast, but I feel like the thought process for George McPhee going into this trade deadline is make a hockey deal. Make a hockey deal with the Ottawa Senators. Make a hockey deal with the Philadelphia Flyers. Send a piece that they can use And both of those teams could use a Shea Theodore or a Colin Miller for sure.
Yes.
So make a hockey deal, get a piece, don't mortgage the future anymore. Because you've made deals with assets already.
Yes.
You can't
the Tatar deal and the Pacioretty deal.
You can't keep doing that. So pave the way for your young guys. Give them a logical next step. Because Brännström's ready to go next season.
Yeah, and the thing
he
is,
might even be ready now.
You mentioned you have to believe in Brännström. And as much as McPhee with the overcooking, with like everyone, I feel like the general consensus amongst the fan base is George McPhee thinks that those rookies suck because he won't play them, and there are other kids younger than them playing them. That's not the case. He straight up said the reason we traded Brad Hunt for nothing, they literally gave up Brad Hunt for nothing, for no reason other than Brad Hunt's a cool guy, let's give him a chance.
Yeah.
Because of his belief in Haig and Brännström.
No,
and
I agree. I agree with you. I know Brännström's going to have an adjustment period.
Of course.
But he's going to be a stud.
Rasmus Dahlin had an adjustment period, and now he's an absolute monster.
Yes, exactly. And you look at, again, how much better you might become defensively by adding these players in. And then you have Mark Stone. Like, I'm all in on Mark Stone. I'm all in on Wayne Simmonds. Like, I'm all in on something that is going to help you this year and pave the way for your defensemen.
Yeah. And the thing is, it could, like, every trade can end up poorly. The
sure.
Tatar trade, we all thought when Tatar was coming over, we all said he fits perfectly. He plays a fast style. Obviously, that was a disaster.
Wasn't great.
The way this could backfire is you trade, like, let's say that Mark Stone agrees that he's going to come over and mm-hmm. he's going to sign.
Yep.
Shea Theodore could end up being a really good player, which is a good chance. And then say Brännström comes up and he's not good. Or Haig comes up and he's not good. And now all of a sudden you have a huge hole on defense that you had filled with Shea Theodore. That's the way this could backfire. But I think the young kids are good enough to
I've got
that won't happen.
One thing to say to that. You had 20 games to figure it out this year.
Yes.
You had 20 games?
And they didn't.
You had 20 games to just throw whatever assortment of the kids you wanted to on the back end out into game situations, you didn't do it.
You that was also before they had a season of AHL games under their belt, though. Like, they're more ready for it now.
I agree with that.
If
that
20 games came at the end of the season, I think there's a better chance he does it now that he's seen what they can do at the AHL.
I agree with you, but at some point, you just have to see what you have. I mean, you're never, knock on wood, hopefully you're never going to have that situation again, right? Like,
yeah.
Hopefully that doesn't happen next season, but it was an opportunity, even if it's not, like, even if you don't decide to play Brännström 9 games, give him 2-3 games, you see what you like. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But my point is, you would have had something to base it on. You would have had some tangible proof to base it on, and I don't think that you have that right now. I believe Brännström's going to be very good.
Yeah, I think everybody does, yeah.
And I don't think losing a Colin Miller or Shea Theodore is the worst thing in the world if it nets you a Mark Stone.
Yeah.
And then paves the way for one of or two of your four stud defensemen in the AHL.
Yeah. They have such a good base on defense that I think most people think, oh, we've got all these young studs in the AHL. Let's trade those prospects for a good NHL player, which you could do, but what we're proposing is, no, trade the current guy,
mm-hmm.
get younger,
yep,
and you could end up being better in the long run rather than trading the prospect.
Yes, 100%.
And Theodore's a proven commodity. You can get, I mean, he's a very, now, we keep saying Theodore, like, now everyone thinks I want Shea Theodore shipped out of
Vegas. That's the thing.
Like, I love Shea Theodore, and he could end up being a stud kid. Like, you don't need to get rid of him. It could be Colin Miller. I'm just saying the way to get these forwards is not throwing 3 first-round picks and a second-round pick at him. Like, that's not the way to do it.
I think it has to be a hockey deal. It has to be a roster player going back the other way. At minimum, it has to be that.
Yeah.
Because you look at the comments from Eugene Melnyk. You look at what these organizations want to do. They want to start winning quickly. And a Shea Theodore gets you there a lot faster than a first-round pick or a second-round pick or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be 3 years down the road before those kids.
Exactly. So there's all that. Golden Knights lost 4 games in a row. Well, they lost 2 games before the All-Star break, then they lost 2 games after the All-Star break and the bye week.
Only the second time they've lost 4 games in a row in franchise history.
Yep, and I laughed so much when it was like just the worst possible time for a 4-game losing streak. No,
I can think of a worse one.
I can think of one.
It happened in early June.
Yeah, exactly.
Against the Washington Capitals.
Jake Bischoff was recalled. He's been with the team. He hasn't played. Do you think it's unfair to Jake Bischoff that he hasn't been able to play? Like,
no.
Have you seen a defensive effort worthy of keeping Jake Bischoff off the ice?
Like, well, I mean,
could you give
Derek England a couple games off? Yeah, you could.
Do you think Derek England needs a couple days off just because he needs a couple days off just because he might be tired?
Well,
he's played a ton of hockey.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they should. And, like, I am more progressive thinking in this than most NHL people are.
Sure.
Give the guys days off all the time. I think William Karlsson should have days off. I think Jonathan Marchessault should have some games off. Like, down the stretch here, give some guys some days off. And Derek England is old as hell. Yeah, give him a day off.
Brandon Peary, you going to play on this homestand?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. You think he plays tomorrow?
No. No, I think Gallant sticks with Lindbergh. But I remember, this is like very, very seldom does Gallant say something that I'm like, oh, wow, that was good information. Because usually he's up there to tell us as little as possible,
sure,
and he's good at it. Every once in a while, he gives us a peek behind the curtain by accident. And this was a couple weeks ago. He mentioned that he kept, who was it that sat out for a long time? Lindbergh.
Mm-hmm.
And Lindbergh played in a game for the first time in like 15 games, and he had a really good game.
Yeah.
And Gallant said, we as a coaching staff realized we kept him out too long, and we shouldn't do that.
Right.
And ever since that moment, it has been a very, very consistent rotation of scratches between Noshik, Carpenter, Lindbergh, and now Peary is in that rotation. I think Peary getting benched is not a Peary's been awful, bench him. I think it's, okay, you're not playing well enough to force us to keep you on the ice, so we're going to put you in that rotation with Lindbergh and Carpenter and Noshik and Peary. I don't expect any of them to be out for extended periods of time. I expect that rotation to continue because I think Gallant and his coaching staff learned that players shouldn't sit that long. It's healthier for the roster to keep them rotating.
All right, so we put out some questions. We put out for some questions, and we're going to try to get to a couple. We've got about 4.5 minutes or so. At Patak Attack 30, oh. Steven Patak. Okay, I actually have a serious question for once. Who do you feel will take over as the next starting goalie after Marc-Andre Fleury? Other than possibly Subban, I'm kind of worried about him not staying healthy. They really don't have much even close to ready in the pipeline. My initial thought is Dylan Ferguson. My initial thought is Dylan Ferguson. I've been impressed with his development and how he's gotten better over development camps. The experience he had last season, yes, he didn't play very much. He played mop-up work in one game. But I feel like that experience just as a whole made him better. But I believe in Malcolm Subban. I do. And I think if you can manage the minutes correctly between Marc-Andre Fleury and Malcolm Subban, and you can get Subban more starts, and he's more durable over the next couple of seasons, I can see a situation in which Malcolm Subban's ceiling raises, and he gets closer to that, and he can become a legitimate starting goalie in the NHL.
Yeah, I think Malcolm Subban's a starting goalie in the NHL one day. The biggest worry is health. The guy can't stay healthy practicing. How's he going to stay healthy playing 60 games a year? To answer Patak's question of if it's not Subban, it's going to be someone that's not in the organization right now because there is an age gap. Ferguson's not going to be ready by then. If we're looking at just the guys in the organization, let's just do like a quick goalie overview. So obviously like Fleury's the stud, Subban's the backup. I don't think Dansk or Lagasse are the answer to that.
I don't either.
I think those guys are AHLers. That can come up and fill a backup role
and
you're
make
not
a make
worried.
A diving poke check into four men.
That was a disaster. But Lagasse,
I'm just saying.
Yeah,
come
it
on.
It was a horrible.
It was
poke
not a
check.
Good decision.
Then you look at the prospects and you got Yuri Patera, you got Maxim Zhukov, and you've got Ferguson. That's kind of that group. And Ferguson clearly passed those guys. This year at development camp, we saw he was a step ahead of them. He didn't play in the rookie games because he was the only one that was brought into exhibition preseason games of the prospects. He's clearly separated himself from Zhukov and Patera.
Yep.
The one that we haven't mentioned, who Dave Pryor singled out, I didn't even ask him about him. He singled him out to me, which speaks volumes.
Sure.
He's the guy. Like, a lot of goalie coaches are kind of like, okay, Turk, you coach the players, McPhee gets them. That's not the case with Dave Pryor. Dave Pryor, if you look at his title, it's not just goalie coach. It's, I think, goalie coordinator or whatever. He drafts all the goalies. Yeah. He decides who's in the AHL. He decides who's in the ECHL. He does everything with the goalies. Nobody, McPhee doesn't tell Pryor anything with the goalies. So right. If Dave Pryor likes a guy, that's a good sign for that kid. And Jordan Coy, K-O-O-Y, it's pronounced Coy for some reason, is a kid that Pryor took in the seventh round.
Yeah.
And Pryor told me when I draft, we could have just not drafted him, but I wanted to draft him because it sends a message, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't have been drafted. And the reason is because he's playing for the London Knights. Last year, he was the backup goalie on his junior team. Do you know how many backup goalies get drafted in the NHL?
Not many.
None. The answer
not
is
many.
None, except
not
for
many.
Jordan Coy. And Dave Pryor told me, this is like at the beginning of the season, and he'd only played a couple games with the London Knights because now he's the starter. He told me, he's like, we drafted him in the seventh round because he's going to be one of the best goalies in the draft this year once people see him play. So we just got him a year early. And what do you know? The London Knights are the best team in their junior hockey league.
Yeah.
And Coy has been an absolute stud for them.
So that's your guy.
I think Jordan Coy, but that's down the road. I mean, the kid's 18 years old right now.
Can you look it up? 6 years.
We're talking
five,
yeah,
6 years.
Yeah, yep. That's a long, like Marc-Andre Fleury, if it for the handoff to be Fleury to Coy, Marc-Andre Fleury would have to play till he's 40.
Well, you
41,
can
42.
You can bridge the gap with Malcolm Subban.
That's yes. But anyways, I am very high on Coy. If there's a kid that you're looking for in this organization and you're a goalie guy like me, like Patak, and there's someone you want to be excited about, Coy on the London Knights is the kid.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I like it.
All right, so it's an abbreviated show today. Sorry, we're not going like an hour and a half, but, you know, stuff happens. Anyway, like Jared Justice being in our studio.
I know, killing us.
Yeah, we're going to yell at Tyler Bischoff about that.
Just for that, Jake Bischoff isn't playing in this homestand.
Just for that, Jake Bischoff's never going to play for the Golden Knights ever again.
Yeah.
Just never going to get into a game. All right, that's the Rink Rats for this week. Jesse, where can people find you?
At theathletic.com. Please subscribe. Right now we have a trade deadline special. Look, if you're thinking about joining The Athletic and you've been like waffling, it's $10 a month.
Okay.
I can see that.
Hold on. When do you not have a special? When are there not specials
to
join The Athletic?
There are occasionally not specials.
There's never been an occasion.
Yeah, but this one is like a really good special. Usually it's like 30% off, it's 20% off. This one, it's $2.99 a month if you sign up right now.
That's bullshit.
For the first year.
That is bullshit.
$2.99 a month. Do it now. Just sign up. Just do it. I'm telling you, you'll love it. It'll be the greatest $2.99 a month you'll ever spend.
It's almost like Custance, right? Like where he does his plugs for The Athletic, but yeah. He almost like doesn't want to. He's like, here's some of the cool things that we do at The Athletic. And I'm sitting here every single time I say, hey, what are you working on? You're like, oh, got something up on The Athletic. Please subscribe. By the way, here's a promotion we're running.
Special.
Here's a, like,
sign up.
It's all the time.
Yeah, no, you're right. We do have a lot of promotions, but it's usually not this much. It's usually, I think, like at any time you can get the 20% off for the first year.
Like, yeah,
I think that's a year round thing.
I honestly mean, it's worth it for sure, but. I just find it really funny because you're always like, there'll be a March Madness promotion, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't
do
it now, there'll be a March, and then there'll be a Stanley Cup playoff promotion, and then there'll be a Stanley Cup final promotion.
You have figured
and then
us
there'll
out.
Be a trade deadline. I'm sorry, a free agency promotion.
Yes,
like,
yes,
it's
yes,
all
yes.
over the place with you guys.
Yes.
I'm Ryan the Hockey Guy. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy. You can catch me on Fox Sports 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, Monday through Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Quick programming note as well. Oh, and also pregame, intermission, and postgame for all Vegas Golden Knights hockey games. Monday, so this is coming out on Saturday. The following Monday, so the next 2 days after this comes out, Jesse Granger will be joining me in studio for the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. It'll be Jesse and I. Frank will be doing something far more important for one day out of his life, but he will be back on Tuesday. But it will be Jesse and I, almost a Rink Rats takeover of sorts. But we still have to like throw to commercials and not swear, so there's that.
Takes all the fun out of it. Commercials, right, and not swearing.
All right, guys, thanks for supporting the podcast. Remember, if you are on iTunes, like and subscribe, give us 5 stars, leave a hashtag Suck at Granger. That's all we really ask of you. You don't need to like tell us that we're good or anything. Just hashtag Suck at Granger. We know you love us. All right, thanks. Bye.